If you're a dog owner, you'll want to hear from our next guest. Maybe your dog is driving you crazy. Maybe he bothers your neighbors with his barking. Or maybe your dog just won't make nice with other dogs in the neighborhood. And despite obedience classes, you can't get your dog to behave the way you want. Well, according to our guest, Kim Brophy, maybe the problem isn't with your dog. Maybe you don't know your dog well enough to understand how to change his or her behavior. Brophy is a canine behavior consultant. Her new book is called Meet Your Dog. She joins us now. And Kim Brophy, you say the best way to understand your dog's behavior is through a system you call LEGS, L-E-G-S, each letter standing for a factor that shapes who your dog is. Take us through that.
So L is learning, and the learning is your dog's experiences and education in life. So a lot of times that's the primary cultural value we have, that it's, quote, all how you raise them. They're tabula rosa, blank slate puppies, and we can just make them what we want them to be. But then there's these three other legs that we need to talk about and consider too. So environment, the aspects of your dog's external world. So what's happening in a given moment and on a daily basis for our dogs as they meet the world that they're sharing with us. And then the genetics, the DNA that designed the dog on the inside and out, what we can see and what we also can't see, the genetic software. And then the self, the unique interior world of the dog, their health, age, sex, development, and then their one in a million unique qualities as an individual.
Let's talk about the learning part, because when I got a puppy, I read in this book, The Art of Raising a Puppy, which a lot of people who get puppies, they read that book, that the first 16 weeks are crucial for the dog, because the things that they learn in the latter half of that time period, they will remember forever. Is that true?
Yes, it is. Yep, that's the critical socialization period for dogs. Now, it's not as definitive, black and white, like a line in the sand at 16 weeks, it's over. But it's flexible and variable among different individual dogs and then different types of dogs. For instance, Guardian, the giant breeds, that development is more drawn out and it's stretched out, takes longer, all of those different developmental markers. And we're still learning about those differences. But that critical period is very essential. And yet, it's interesting because the way that we've been approaching socialization, we've kind of had the approach to it like the more the merrier, and we'll just flood our dogs with all these sensory experiences and therefore they will like them. And the reality is that for some dogs, the opposite is actually true, and that exposing a certain type of dog or a certain personality of dog to those experiences, if we're not carefully watching and observing, those socialization experiences can actually be detrimental to our dogs.
Give me an example of that.
So my own dog that I just got this year, I got a Guardian mixed breed dog. She's Pyrenees and Newfoundland. And as I was working with her, socializing her in my downtown location and behavior center and all these restaurants and cars and things like that, one of the things that I found was that she, in classic kind of Guardian style, was a little bit on the reserved side and a little more cautious than, say, a Golden Retriever or even my Australian Shepherd that I had in the past. And so when I would even feed her treats while someone came up and offered to pet her, if they moved too quickly and they weren't reading her well, the next interaction with a stranger would be worse for her. And so as I was socializing her going forward from there, seeing that she was in fact true to her guardian self, I would not allow people just to come up and pet her, but I would rather invite them to invite her and completely leave it up to her, as opposed to even reaching towards her to offer her a treat. She needed a little bit more time than another type of dog would. And now she has no discomfort or fear around strangers. She just needed to go about that process differently due to her reserve nature.
What if you make a mistake in how you relate with your dog? Is it possible to change bad behavior?
In yourself or the dog? I think in both cases it's true, right? The cool thing is about learning, and when I remember when I had this realization years ago in my career, we think of learning like it's this mechanism that operates outside of evolution. And the actuality is that learning is the cogs and the wheels of evolution, because if things can't adapt to circumstances, if they can't change their behaviors and make different choices based on the varying pressures, then they're doomed. So a certain behavior the dog might have been born with as part of their genetic software, because that particular behavior was reinforced for so many subsequent, I mean, prior generations, that in subsequent generations, it's going to die hard. It's going to be very difficult to modify something that has that long of a reinforcement history. Now, when it comes to something we've done with our dog, or some interaction we've had, or some habit that has set about in place just in the dog's lifetime with us, then yes, if we change the circumstances, if we change the environment, if we change the responses and the outcomes that the dog is getting, if we work to change the ideas that they're bringing to the table, then those things can shift. But you have to be really realistic about your expectations through that process, and also take full responsibility, as we kind of started with this conversation on that point, of we're half of that story. You know, we have to realize that what we want them to do is one thing, but what are we doing to actually create and facilitate that behavior? We have to modify both of our behaviors simultaneously in most cases.
You go through all the different kinds of dogs. I looked at the one that I have, which is a golden doodle, which it turns out, I didn't realize this, is a gun dog. It's called a gun dog. And you say that they're lovable because they're enthusiastic, outgoing, and cooperative, but they may be hard to live with because they're active, immature, and doting, which I think is spot on. I mean, is genetics the biggest part of a dog's behavior, do you think?
No, I think all four of the legs contribute equally to the dog's behavior. And I think what genetics gives us is just the point of reference. It's just the starting point. And then all of those other variables are going to play in as importantly. But if it's kind of like, I'll use the analogy, if you pick up a pen and try to make a phone call with it, you're going to be really frustrated. You know, you got to know what it is first and then go from there.
All right, let me go through a few specifics with you, just in a little bit of a lightning round. These are the kinds of things that a lot of people who have dogs may wonder. You write that instead of punishing your dog when he chases a squirrel, train him to come to you and the two of you chase the squirrel together. How does that work?
So that's about the PREMAC principle. And what we're doing is we're using the motivation that the dog already has as the reinforcement for the behavior that we want. So we're not going to compete with it with other punishers or reinforcers. So the dog comes to you, and then together you can chase the squirrel up the tree.
Especially if you're good at climbing trees, right?
Right. You hope you don't have to do that.
What about during meal times? How do you deal with a dog who's just eaten but then comes to beg at the table when you're eating?
Well, you want to make sure you're setting up the environment so that the dog is not getting reinforced for that behavior. So if the dog is able to get scraps under the table, then that's going to accidentally reinforce the behavior. So
don't
give
scraps.
Tether, yeah, exactly. Tether the dog on the other side of the room a few feet away. And if he's calm throughout the meal, at the end of the meal, he could have some table scraps. That's also the PREMAC principle.
Why do we train dogs to do crazy things like roll over?
I think for our own amusement, really. And, you know, sometimes they like it, and sometimes there's an arbitrary piece of bacon at the end of it, which, if there's no competing motivation, might sound perfectly lovely to the dog. And some of those things are fine. You know, it's wonderful to teach a dog tricks. They can enjoy the learning process and the chance to make choice. You just want to make sure that they don't turn into our circus ponies in our living room.
If you find that it's just not working with you and your dog, is it ever appropriate to give the dog up?
I think absolutely. And I think that is one of the hardest things for us to talk about as a culture, because the greater solution that, of course, I would love, that I think we should all be working towards, is that we're not getting the mismatch in the first place. But just like any relationship, we might find that it is a star-crossed love affair where the animal's own best interests are not going to be in mind in our lifestyle and situation. And if that's the case, sometimes it's more cruel to put the square peg in the round hole than to try to find a square hole for that square peg.
That's Kim Brophy, who is a canine behavior consultant. Her new book is called Meet Your Dog, The Game-Changing Guide to Understanding Your Dog's Behavior. Kim, thanks so much.
Thank you for having me.
And I have posted a photo of my dog, Midas, not always well-behaved, but always cute, on Twitter, @JeremyHobson.